Hello and a happy new year.
Happy new year.
Welcome to 2020. Jack, how was your New Year's?
Fantastic, thanks. How was yours?
Yeah, good, thanks, man. Good. What did you get up to?
I went to a friend's house in Orpington and partied and did a quiz and it was good.
Good man. I think this is actually the first New Year's Eve that we haven't spent together
for
in
years.
A while.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sad time. Sad times.
I think,
but
yeah.
I guess this is growing up in the words of Blink 182. So.
This is the life we live. Know, yeah. This is reality. Hope you all had amazing New Year's as well and wonderful Christmases.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
This is our first episode back after Christmas, so we have a long list of episodes yet to come.
Some we've recorded already.
Yeah, exactly. A long list to catch up on, all for your wonderful entertainment. Welcome back to 2020. Hope your New Year's resolutions are going well so far. Jack, any particular resolutions that you're happy to share?
New Year's resolutions, obviously get fit, save more, finally get round to watching The Irishman. I didn't watch it last year. I was meaning to watch it in the days before this, but I just couldn't get that 3.5 hours down to sit down and watch it.
That 3.5 hours.
I've always
marathon.
Got through the first half hour then. Like, it's no defence to Martin because it's a great film. But me and Marty are on first name terms, by the way. But it's just a case of I just end up falling asleep.
That
or
was how your knees went
so,
down.
Yeah.
You're in some part of Manhattan, schmoozing away.
So I turned up in a Marvel t-shirt and got thrown out the door by Joe Pesci.
I love it that his daughter wrapped his present in Marvel wrapping.
I'd love it if, like...
Brilliant.
Like, he just got for Marvel as a present, like, the complete Marvel box set, and he felt like obliged he had to watch it.
Just like... Or, you know, the Marvel New York-themed hotel in Disneyland Paris?
Yes.
And he just taken, like, a two-week-long holiday there.
He ends up writing a whole film there, which is called Why I Hate Superhero Films.
Special accommodation in the Spider-Man suite. nice, good stuff, good stuff. Hope your New Year's resolutions are going very well. Again, I almost watched The Irishman last night with my family, but I knew a couple of nights ago, but we ended up watching The Hustle instead.
Okay.
The new one with Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson.
How was that?
Surprisingly impressed. I think the thing with my family is that whenever my parents are in charge of the remote, we always tend to go for these kind of not very well publicised, sort of, I don't want to say B-movie, but slightly less hyped up comedy films, comedy dramas. And about 70% of the time, I'm actually surprisingly impressed.
Is that one of your films where your dad's famous delayed laugh happens like a day later? Just like driving to work, he just has like a massive laughing fit, like, oh, 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 that young Rebel Wilson, so yeah.
But suddenly he just clicks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's I would definitely imagine so.
I'm still waiting for him to get that punchline to that joke I told him 10 years ago.
It's going to be at your wedding. I just didn't hear this laugh echo into the reception.
Just turns off at the back, like, Jack, I got it. I was like, thanks.
That's the entire best man speech. From my dad. So I hope your 2020 is going well so far. And welcome back to an epic, exciting, productive, creative, and very special year for Tom Hanks Defence Force.
Hey.
And now for our feature presentation, Tom Hanks Defence Force, with your hosts, Alex Halpern and Jack Fryer. A podcast for people who love film, television, and Tom Hanks. Welcome back to Tom Hanks Defence Force. As we said a moment ago, we hope you're having the best year of your life so far, a good few days in. So for our first episode of 2020, we are actually going back to 2019.
19, yeah.
Yeah, we thought it wouldn't be quite right starting the new year without reviewing a very interesting year for film and some TV as
well. Yeah, of course, yeah. It was a very interesting year for the industry. We've seen the streaming war fully start to ramp up now. We've got Disney Plus has started in America. We've got, obviously, Peacock and HBO Max have announced their plans for next year.
Big new plans for Amazon Prime.
Prime as well, yeah. They've started getting to the live sporting market last year as well, and which you're going to see a big shift in their streaming agenda as well. So that's a little more exciting for us as well as consumers.
Yeah, exciting times. I mean, so I guess if we just sort of start off the discussion with what our favourite films were for 2018, and like why we love them, why they're important for this year, for this time. So I mean, Jack, what was your favourite film of 2019? What made 2019 for you?
Ah, okay. So where do you want me to start? Just with a favourite film, or work my way up?
I'd say, start off with your favourite film.
Okay, so my favourite film...
Are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. So my favourite film of 2019, it was a tussle, it was like a big brawl, but I think the film that emerged, I think really, given the fact how much I ended up listening to the soundtrack, was Joker. I think that was my favourite film of 2019.
Yeah, nice.
I was completely blown away by Joaquin Phoenix's tour de force performance in that.
Mm.
You know, I knew he had it in him, but I didn't expect he had that much in him, so...
Surpass expectations.
Only bathroom dances way into our hearts. So yeah,
all completely improvised.
Yes.
I mean, were there any particular moments? Just to clarify, this is a spoiler episode. So if you haven't seen Joker or the film or the the most sort of important films or the most like widely discussed in better terms films I of think- last year, then. Yeah, maybe try and watch a few of those before coming to this episode.
Yeah.
But your choice.
I do love the way how Joker was a massive comment on the dangers of leaving the most vulnerable behind in our society. It's obviously been analysed as very anti-austerity by a lot of more left-wing critics.
Mm.
And it's also the bit where Boris Johnson got his inspiration from hiding in a fridge, so...
Yeah. That's the power of the internet to pick up these moments and use them for everything.
I bet after the election,
never
failed
to impress me.
Is where he was just dancing in a bathroom somehow along with all the other Tory MPs.
The massive majority all just managed to fit in there. But in Gotham, not here.
Yeah, Gotham. Yeah, it's just I just found it just. I think Todd Phillips just completely exposed. Past expectations as a director, because obviously we know him really as the Hangover, an old school guy.
Dirty,
you know,
comedies.
He did War Dogs as well, but this is, I think, just full on. It completely blew me off my feet. I've still been thinking about it for so long. I've already pre-ordered the Blu-ray. It's we're going to come when it is a release. I've pre-ordered that since last year. So yeah,
followed by a Tom Hanks Defence Force Joker night.
Yes,
yeah. With Rob Byrne.
Yeah, we're all going to dress up and we're all going to have to take turns dancing in the bathroom. So.
Someone's going in your fridge by the end of the
night. And everyone's got to leave. They got all danced down the stairs to leave as they leave it.
Yeah, it was...
My neighbours are patiently waiting to leave the flat and we're just us are dancing down the stairs.
Just like the echoing, booming sound of steps just like... sort of shuddering their walls. It was a very powerful film.
Yeah.
I think I agree with everything you've just said in all the themes it discussed. It was a very well-structured film as well, I thought, particularly because it was focusing on anti-austerity, the impact of austerity on mental health.
Yes, exactly.
The way we treat each other based on what TV personalities say about us. Very much a film about how we treat each other. And... I agree with a significant amount of commentary that it's very much a film needed for this time.
Exactly.
Particularly because we can be so aggressive towards each other over seemingly minimal things. Yeah, and that's just the internet, but when you take it out into the real world,
and
we do look past things that in more of a utopian society, we would pay more attention to. And we would be sympathetic towards.
It's just the case of, obviously, obviously Gotham's got a massive rat problem, the trash isn't being collected, and the vulnerable people like Arthur Fleck are just left to their own devices, really, and that's when people like that aren't given the right support and support network, obviously things do go awry. I'm not saying that all gonna dress up as a clown and kill people on the subway or something, but it does show the dangers that, you know, it's a very big debate, you know, that we do as a society. It is our responsibility to kind of look after those who can't really look after themselves. And I think Joker kind of
reminded us of that.
Yeah, because people said like Joker could be any. It works for any country. Any country can see a bit of that. Because you said you can, even though Gotham's obviously is clearly based on 80s, 70s New York. You know, you can see a bit of London in it, a bit of Paris. You can see everything. Mm. Actually, funny, you saw a status saying, if you just replace Rob De Niro with Jonathan Ross, you'd get Joker in England. So,
Yeah, Graham Norton, Johnny Ross. Yeah, it's... I mean, but I guess... I guess it takes a very strong look at a lot of liberal attitudes in America as well.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, this very, you know, very much this, you know, this conversation about what humor is acceptable,
yeah.
What humor should lead the hierarchy in, you know, in common discourse on in general mainstream entertainment. Yeah, it really, and I guess, you know, which sort of accumulates in his speech right at the end.
Yeah.
Where he's talking about, well, you know, he goes from just, you know, arguing about what, you know, what is funny and what isn't funny and how,
yeah.
you know, you're sort of policing comedy, which I guess you can kind of look at in Todd Phillips' comments, you know, his famous comment about why he doesn't make comedy anymore.
Yeah.
And then to go from that into how, you know, society has devolved into this unsympathetic...
Yeah.
Sort of everybody out for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, when we also preach this rhetoric of looking out for each other, and you know, it really was this. You know, it really did create this like chaos of a broken society. And like you were saying, you can see that in the majority of the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say my favourite film, Joker, I put a second personally.
Ooh.
For everything you said, and because it was a really beautifully crafted film, really interesting turn for Todd Phillips, like you mentioned, obviously stellar performance by Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, of course, not forgetting the supporting cast as well. Obviously, Joaquin Phoenix's performance is obviously one for the ages, but I feel slightly sad that the other great performances by Zazie Beetz, De Niro,
yeah.
the rest of the cast are all kind of overshadowed in a way. And but obviously, when it's called Joker, it's a character study though.
Exactly,
and it's
yeah.
about him at the end of the day.
People went in
yeah.
expecting that character study, and it's almost like all the other characters are just catalysts for
yeah.
For Arthur
for
Fleck,
yeah.
you know, sort of devolution,
yeah.
For lack of a better term. Yeah, so yeah, I put that as second. Just because there was one film in particular that I think just about topped it for me, but for very different reasons. And that was Ari Aster's Midsommar.
Oh, okay.
I was completely blown away by that film. And I was actually late to the party seeing it. I meant to see it in cinemas for a while, but timing got the best of me, so that was a bit difficult. But in terms of its cinematography, its themes, the way it addressed those themes... yeah, the way that you had a very human story about a crumbling relationship and, you know, the way it sort of psychoanalyzed the breakdown of that relationship within this Wicker Man-esque cult
yeah.
horror was really interesting, a really interesting approach. And also how, you know, it's a film where 90% of it, at least, is set during daylight.
Yeah, I know.
I get that was the initial gimmick.
I know, but a daylight horror, though, it's not something you would see often, is it?
Exactly, but... yeah, and it's, you know, it went very confidently into that, and it paid off.
Exactly.
But it's also a psychedelic horror as well. I mean, you know, without giving anything away, and I won't give away any spoilers for this, but towards the end of the film, and correct me if you disagree,
yeah.
but it gets increasingly wavy to
yeah.
look at. Yeah, it's a very difficult film to watch at
it
times.
It is. I know I found it extremely uncomfortable, which obviously is the point of it. You know, it's a
2.5 hour,
18-rated horror film. So,
and that was the brilliance of it. And I think Aster explored a lot of that in Hereditary as well. That it's not, you know, it's not these conventional tropes of the jump scare, the
yeah.
gore, the, you know, these very codified conventions that make good horror. It's like you were saying, it's the discomfort, it's the unease, it's that growing apprehension of not knowing what's to come, and that's just, you know, that's just sort of sickening to
yeah.
to watch, and you're sat there waiting for something horrible to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether you think that comes or not is a different question, but it's that build-up that, you know, is almost like Hitchcockian in tension.
Yeah, of course.
And stellar performances. George Pugh was fantastic.
Florence Pugh,
that yeah. was it. But who's George?
George Pugh.
Yeah. Florence Pugh was fantastic.
She was. She's. I think it's going to be. Obviously, she did Fighting My Family as well. It's not on my top list, but that's a decent, funny film, and she was great in it. And I think she's going to be one of the big breakout stars of the next decade. Obviously, she's got a prominent role opposite Scarlett Johansson in Marvel's Black Widow.
Mm.
So, and she's got other works in the pipeline. So we'll see how that goes. So,
see how our career takes
yeah.
off in the 20s,
yes.
the roaring 20s. What other big films were, like, you know, topped your general list?
Okay, so I'll go from I'll just read them up. Honourable mentions: Us, Booksmart, Vice, If Beale Street Could Talk, Star Wars, Child's Play, the remake, which was my biggest surprise of the year, the Child's Play remake. And now I just thought how it perfectly captured changing themes. So obviously updating Chucky from a possessed doll to AI gone wrong, I thought it was going to be a bit of a gimmick, but it was actually played extremely well. And obviously we've got Captain Marvel and Spider-Man Far From Home as well. But I'll go for my list. Number 10, one of my big guilty pleasures, it's of course Godzilla King of the Monsters. It's a film I saw twice at the cinema, just because, one, it's perfect escapism. If you just want... Look, it got absolutely slaughtered by a lot of critics. Empire gave it one star. Some people, have said it's one of the worst films I've seen, but other reviewers gave it higher, like 8 out of 10 or even 10 out of 10. It's just a very fun film where it's just time just to kind of leave your kind of critical thinking at the door and just watch a giant lizard mess up a three-headed dragon. That's literally what it is at the end of the day.
How you're spending your Friday night.
And it was it's so much fun. I want to watch it again. Number 9 I've gone for is Ad Astra.
Nice.
But I saw that. I wish I kind of saw that in IMAX, but it's a very, very powerful film. Sure, a lot of people said it's long and drawn out. Didn't have enough space in it as well, I thought, but that's my big criticism. I'm joking, there's lots of percent space. But no, I thought it was powerful. And the cinematography is very good, and how it reflects Brad Pitt's mental state as well. I thought that was fantastic. Number 8, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the new latest by Quentin Tarantino. Or Quentin Quarantino. Number 7.
Love it.
The Netflix film, The Two Popes, with Anthony Hopkins, Jonathan Pryce,
yet to see it.
It's fantastic. Same director of City of God.
Amazing things.
Same director of City of God, whose name escapes me.
Which is a fantastic film. Yeah,
that's a fantastic film as well. It's one of my favourites. Brilliant. But it's got everything from it, from very gentle comedy, some big belly laughs in it, but also very important debates on and conversations are had in the film about subject areas such as the abuse scandal of the Catholic Church, leadership, what is truly the best leader, a reluctant leader, modernization versus tradition. It's all held, and it's just at the end of the day, it's just two big powerhouse performances from Sir Anthony Hopkins, Jonathan Pryce, who obviously Anthony Hopkins represents tradition, Jonathan Pryce represents modernity, and it's just he's kind of the two fourth between them is just fantastic, and it was just fully engrossed for the 2 hours.
A film about those conversations.
Yeah. I think it was a play at first originally, and I was thinking, while watching it could work very well as a play.
Mm.
But yeah, number 6 for me, it's the only non-English language film on this list, but it was Parasite. It's not yet to receive a wide release, but it's had some Odeon screenings, for Screen Unseen. It's had a festival run, but just a magnificent film. It's about a family who infiltrate another family's lives by all getting jobs as staff. It's about how them trying to slowly twisting this family and essentially abusing it. And it was just really gripping and thrilling and uncomfortable at times.
So is it a film, I'm yet to see it, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a film about, kind of discusses class?
Yeah, class is a big thing in it. Because the main family in it, they're all very poor. They're poor, they share a really bad quality flat in South Korea, I think. And I think 90% sure it's South Korea, but obviously it's where people urinate outside their house, and it's just really, and it's all run down, and there's really poor, they're a very poor family, but they steal their neighbour's Wi-Fi, and the only place they can get free Wi-Fi is in their toilet, and so one of them ends up getting a job teaching English for a rich family, and he ends up getting all his other family jobs by devious means within this family, so it's how they slowly start to take over his kind of family and infect their lifestyles.
Okay.
So it's very tense and brilliant to watch.
Mm.
Number 5, Toy Story 4, of course. How could it not be? Toy Story 4 is one of those films, still the debate rages, didn't need to be made or not. Even though Toy Story 3 was a perfect end to that trilogy, I think 4 doesn't ruin the ending, and I think it adds a lot of nuance and brilliance to the story, and I thought it was really well done as well. Number 4, Stan and Ollie, the Laurel and Hardy film, just absolutely beautiful, teared up massively at the end, just powerhouse performances from Steve Coogan and John C. Reilly, just absolute, just so moving. Number three is Knives Out. Ryan Johnson. Some people consider it his redemption after The Last Jedi, depending on how you think of The Last Jedi. I personally really liked it.
Yeah, same.
But a very clever, witty, and powerful film. Murder mystery. A very modern whodunit, which has definitely got traits of Agatha Christie in there. But Daniel Craig's detective is just so damn good in it. I mean, and he really commits to that southern accent throughout the whole film. And
fantastic.
Number two, of course, is Avengers Endgame. You know, 11-year journey wrapped up in the film, and I thought just so well made. It's just impossible. The impossible task was achieved, basically. So, yep, that's my list.
Brilliant. A very good list indeed.
Thank you.
I'd say another few mentions that, you know, I think really stood out for me were Us.
Yep.
Again, Jordan Peele. A really good follow-up to Get Out.
Oh, of course,
yeah. A very difficult task, given, you know, the... Given the themes and wider commentary he was discussing within Get Out were so, you know, so fresh and original, and you know, and very thought provoking, particularly for a discussion that hasn't really been had much before
on
a wider scale. But no, Us was a really good thriller, very unpredictable at times, stellar performances.
Of course, yeah.
Had a few questions about the twist, but
yeah, of course.
Overall. You know, overall, it maintains its status as someone who is a really interesting up-and-coming horror thriller director I'm sure
he's
definitely
got two
has...
films in the pipeline, and he's got an Amazon series about hunting Nazis with Al Pacino in it. So
he does, yeah. The
Hunters,
which was on Amazon Prime.
Yeah,
which is fantastic. And yeah, so it's definitely like solidified his position as a director who has a lot of opportunity, and I'm really excited to see what the 20s has for him. It Chapter 2.
Can't believe I forgot about It.
Which was, like we discussed in a previous episode.
We did a whole episode about it as well. Jeez.
Yeah, we went into detail on those films.
Yeah.
Really good follow-up to the first one. I was really interested to see, as we discussed in the ES episode, how they'd actually portray the two narratives, given that in the book, it mixes between the narrative as children and their narrative as adults. I think the decision to put them in two separate films did work.
Yeah, I think it worked really well.
Both from a studio financial perspective and as a, and from a narrative.
And an audience investment.
Exactly, yeah. But it was really good. They definitely built up the scale. They definitely sort of increase that mystery and that fascination into what, you know, it and Pennywise is and where it comes from. And also, you had some really original twists and turns in the final confrontation, which I really appreciated. And I know I saw it this year, but technically it was released last year, so it is a 2019 film. Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, I liked that a lot.
Obviously, it's you can never discuss big franchise films like this without a certain extent of controversy. But I, again, you know, like we just said, really like The Last Jedi. I thought this was a really good follow up. Still leave some questions open, but that's just for the sake of to expand the universe.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
there are so many opportunities that can come from them. But great action. A lot of, like, funnier characters. I can say this now, I thought C-3PO was funnier.
Yeah, I'm really glad he actually got a good role in this one after kind of being a more of a background, extended background role on 7-8. To see him finally have a bit of an adventure himself was really good.
Exactly, yeah. And he's obviously, without giving anything away, there are, little chinks in his personality that happen along the way.
Yeah.
But, not to give anyone any.
There are some great new characters, including Babu Frick for Droid Smith,
who is fantastic. Some great little great new droids.
Dio, voiced by J.J. Abrams himself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, I mean that's because that was a really interesting character with its unknown trauma.
Yeah,
it's backing away and saying no, thank you, which. Obviously is bringing some very real themes into the Star Wars universe that haven't really been discussed before.
Yeah, of course.
Or explored. But yeah, a lot of very impressive action sequences. A couple of really decent twists. Like we were discussing before the episode, would be great to see it in IMAX because the spectacle is phenomenal at times. So if you haven't seen The Rise of Skywalker, I would definitely say it. This is the, yeah, definitely a solid, memorable film to finish 2019. Yeah,
that's a good film to end on. But, so yeah, we've had some interesting stuff. We had TV as well. Obviously, we've had continuations of series such as BoJack Horseman, which have still received rave reviews. That's my favourite series of 2019.
Mm.
We've also received some... It's been a fantastic year for HBO, specifically with Watchmen and Chernobyl, specifically, those two.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a great year for HBO's TV production.
Yeah, Netflix as well has up their game again with shows like Russian Doll and other The Crown Series 3.
Yeah.
Dark Crystal...
Mm. And just explore, and you know, Netflix's investment in international TV content as
well. Yeah, of course.
One thing I'd highly recommend actually is a Japanese series called The Naked Director.
Okay.
It's about essentially the explosion of the sexual revolution in the porn industry in the 1980s.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's not as sort of, you know, I guess dirty as the woman initially suspects, but stylistically it's quite Scorsese-esque, great soundtrack, very punky, punchy.
It's not a documentary; it's like an actual like.
Oh, it's a drama. Oh, yeah, of course, it's dramatized TV. With actually one of the lead actors is actually in the original Ju-on, the Grudge films.
Okay,
in the first
yeah.
two, yeah.
It's been a good year for Netflix in general. Like their films, their Netflix original films have received a lot more, have been perceived to be a lot more higher caliber. Mm. Obviously, with things like The King and Dolomite Is My Name, which is Eddie Murphy's first R-rated film since the 90s. So
yeah,
that was, which Dolomite was really good fun. It's a really entertaining biopic.
Nice.
Stellar cast. It's got Keegan, Michael Key in it, Craig Robinson, who aka the Pontiac Bandit. So. And Cody Schmidt-McPhee's in it as well, so
it's
good to see he's still alive.
No, definitely. What else, other good TV, yeah, loved Watchmen, would highly recommend it. Chernobyl, again, incredible in scale, in drama, in dialogue.
We've received a lot more serial killer content, I think, this year. Obviously, we've had... The Zac Efron film, Extremely Wicked. Obviously, we've had Charles Manson's been in the Matt Smith starring film, Charlie Says, and obviously that little role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Mm.
Obviously, we've got Mindhunter's continued success, and obviously
the second series.
Yep, and we've had a whole load of content on Netflix as well, which seems to be like serial killer hub central nowadays.
Mm. Well, and just like it's sort of the rebirth of true crime.
Crime, yes.
Yeah, I mean, crime has always been, you know, generally either the most popular or the second most popular genre in literature, but millennials, Gen Zs, I guess sort of like maybe the... You know, a considerable amount of Gen X are really interested in true crime.
Yeah, of course.
And as you'll probably hear us discuss in a later episode, whether we're going to see more of an explosion of this in the 20s
is
going to be really interesting. So yeah, I mean, what other particular sort of defining moments have we had in 2019 that we haven't discussed yet?
So we've had the big streaming war ramp up now. Obviously, Netflix is still hemorrhaging debt to produce more content.
Mm.
While other services like, obviously, I will discuss more in another episode, HBO Max and the NBC one have got their own, they've got backlog. They've got their own, like, hundreds of thousands of hours of backlog.
Mm.
So I think HBO... Max, one of their execs, said we'll have 15,000 hours of content as well, which is like
which
insane.
Is extraordinary.
Yeah. And considering Warner Brothers is history as a studio, you'll be old films from the 40s to like modern day classics. You'll be when that comes out, there'll be a whole range of content.
Mm.
Obviously, Disney Plus as well has exceeded expectations with 10 million subscribers signing up when the service first dropped. Obviously, we've seen Joker as well, Back to Joker, first R-rated film to hit a billion.
Yeah.
Which is further proof, one, that word of mouth is still a very powerful tool.
Yeah, and it's reminding us of the importance of marketing with controversy. I mean, so many outlets were saying this was a dangerous film, it was a film about incels that could generate... violence towards women
there was a big fear of mass shootings during the premiere's release, so much that some cinemas even hired security guards and to do searches on people coming in, and there was people going to see the film dressed as the Joker, which caused like a lot of people in the audience to feel really uncomfortable.
Mm.
knowing there are people just sitting there and they're thinking, oh God, what are they going to do? But yeah. obviously nothing happened. But in fact, the film generated this, though, whether it was a marketing ploy or not remains to be seen. But
yeah, but with any widespread controversy, that always attracts so much interest.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's amazing what, you know, we've seen this since forever.
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, controversy always just maximizes interest. And, you know, there's no reason why 2019 wasn't any different. And if anything, reminded us of that with Joker. But then people watched it and they saw how much of an important film for our time it was. How much, you know, how important it is to rediscuss the themes it explores. And, you know, and generally it was, you know, probably the most discussed film of 2019.
Yeah, of course.
So it was such a huge cultural event.
I know. No, the first R-rated film to get a billion. One of the... considered to be one of the best films of all time already, because it's in the IMDb top 250 already.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's been a phenomenon, the film, and obviously there's no, obviously whether there'll be a sequel or not remains to be discussed, given the fact they had such a small budget of 50 million, it's obviously massively profitable for Warner Brothers.
Yeah, because there was skepticism, there was, you know, a belief that Todd Phillips had already signed on to make a second one, but then that was denied,
I think
it?
So. I think Warner Brothers are obviously will want to keep that spark lit and will want to do it, but it depends if Joaquin Phoenix will do it or not, and obviously if Todd Phillips will do it as well. Because the fact that Joaquin Phoenix, as we've said on previous shows, isn't one for sequels. No, he turned down Doctor Strange because he didn't want to commit to a 6-film deal.
Mm.
But the fact that he has discussed it though with Todd Phillips should give some hope for fans of the film.
And it all depends on how they do it. I mean, it couldn't be... it couldn't be a new story that's just more bland, that's less topical.
I know, because Todd Phillips did say, though, he would like to do a Batman film in that Joker-verse. And obviously there's a theory that the film, the sequel, would be about the Joker and how he becomes a criminal mastermind. And it would show him interacting with other villains such as Two-Face, Riddler, Penguin, Scarecrow...
But would that still discuss the same topics of
exactly,
austerity?
I know, that's the thing, though. I think it would kind of loosen the impact of the first one.
Well, that's the thing, because it wasn't a superhero film, was it?
No.
Yeah, it was a tale about an ordinary man who suffered under the ways of very real, universal circumstances.
And it was like about like the hypocrisy of like characters like Thomas Wayne, how they're like, yeah, I'll help the homeless, when really they've just like forgotten about people who work for them, such as Arthur's mother, basically.
Yeah. No, very, 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 arguably the most important film of 2019.
Some might even say the decade as well.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a debate.
Definitely wants to discuss. Any other particular key moments that stand out?
Obviously, Green Book winning the Oscar was seen as a shock, because a lot of people thought Netflix's Roma had it in the bag, but Green Book shocked the Academy and a lot of people.
I guess
Borders of debate, streaming versus cinema. Yeah,
which is always, you know, which is a topic that's been building up over this year in particular. Are streaming services eligible for your high profile awards?
Which is why
for the
Netflix
Oscars, Golden Globes, etc.
Because Netflix released obviously films like The Irishman, Dolomite Is the Name, The Two Popes in the Cinemas, because obviously they know they've got really good chances of getting nominations for most performances. So they could very much see Netflix clean up in a lot of those categories, some of the contenders they've got already. But, yep.
And that's the thing. Well, I mean, if the Academy shows interest in The Two Popes, I mean, it's, I guess, you know, the money, like you were saying, is on The Irishman and a Marriage Story.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, Marriage Story, I can't remember if that's another one I forgot as well. That was fantastic as well.
I haven't seen it, but it was, that was also widely regarded as one of the best films of 2019.
Yeah, that's, like, I can't believe I forgot that as well,
yeah.
I watched that on Christmas Day of all days. So,
I mean, yeah, my family's Christmas films are generally, like, very unconventional. We watched Black Klansman on Christmas last year, watched the first episode of The Witcher on Christmas Eve this year.
Oh, nice.
Or we watched Miracle on 34th Street this year.
Which Attenborough one.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, classic.
Which is fantastic. I mean,
I know. It's been a very good year for Adam Driver, you know, The Report on Amazon Prime, obviously Marriage Story, Star Wars. Obviously, we've had the Black Klansman hype from the beginning of the year as well. From the Oscars, still carrying him as well. So he's had a very busy end of year, but an extremely good one as well.
It's been a very fascinating year for the development of the industry, for, you know, for important questions to discuss in the 20s.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, how much this year has built up a new decade of a completely changing industry. I know,
and because Disney's dominance, now the Fox deal's gone through, has just been huge. They've had so many billion-dollar films. Obviously, three Marvel films have all got a billion.
Yeah.
Obviously, Avengers Infinity War is the highest-grossing film of all time now.
Well, Disney released, wasn't it, five 1 billion-plus
Yeah, Aladdin as well, Frozen 2. So it's just been, like, incredible. It might be another one as well, but I can't think.
Yeah, I
Toy Story 4 as well, so yeah, 6. And Bob Iger released his book as well, so...
Which I've started reading it, it's really good.
Yeah,
so
I've
far.
Read the first bit of it as well, I'm enjoying it. I'm interested to see how it goes, but I wonder what happens to Mr. Iger at the end.
We shall see. Thank you for listening. If you have any particular opinions on your favourite films of 2019, or anything we've discussed, and even what you're most looking forward to in the year ahead in 2020, then please tweet us at Tom Hanks Defence. We're online, and we'll happily, continue
we'll
the conversation
to, yeah.
there. Great. Thank you for listening, and happy 2020.
Happy new year.
And happy new decade. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. Lots of love. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to Tom Hanks Defence Force. Find us and join the conversation on Twitter and Facebook.